I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 5th of November. ProPublica and NPR have teamed together to write a report inside corporate America's campaign to ditch workers' compensation. One Texas lawyer is helping companies opt out of workers' comp and write their own rules. What does it mean for injured workers is the title of their recently published piece. They obtained the injury benefit plans for nearly 120 companies who have opted out in Texas or Oklahoma, many of them written by this young lawyer's firm. And they've conducted the first independent analysis of how these plans compare to state workers' comp. The investigation found that the plans almost universally have lower benefits and virtually no independent oversight. Here in the state of Wisconsin, legislative Republicans have circulated a bill last week, actually, that would significantly change the state's workers' compensation laws. We have both of the investigators from NPR and ProPublica with us this hour to talk about their exhaustive research, and we're going to discuss it this hour with both of them. Joining us is Howard Berkus. He's a correspondent for the NPR Investigations Unit and has focused since 2010 mostly on investigative projects, beginning with the Upper Big Branch coal mine disaster in West Virginia, in which 29 workers have died. He was part of the team that collaborated with the Center for Public Integrity in 2011, resulting in Poison Places, a series exploring weaknesses in air pollution regulation by states and the EPA. Howard, thank you very much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Also joining us is Michael Grable, and Michael is covering economic and labor issues for ProPublica. He's produced stories for the New York Times, NPR, CBS Evening News. His work has included the TSA, the Lance Armstrong doping allegations, chemicals stored near schools and neighborhoods, a bus fire that killed 23 nursing home patients. He's the author of Money Well Spent, a book about President Obama's stimulus package and his efforts to revive the economy from the Great Recession. Michael, thank you very much for being with us.
Glad to be here.
This is a very thorough investigation. I was interested to read about the Wisconsin legislation that is being circulated right now. Obviously, they were looking at what's going on in Texas and what's going on in Oklahoma. You looked at, well, first of all, let's talk about how widespread this is. How many companies in Texas and in Oklahoma are opting out of workman's comp, and what is in its place? Michael?
There are, in Texas, I mean, there are over, I think, 100,000 different companies that have opted out,
oh,
but not
my.
All of them have these injury benefit plans or are large companies. Have these injury benefit plans. But what they've seen over the last 5 to 10 years is that a number of the nation's biggest employers are opting out and making these injury benefit plans that essentially allow them to write their own rules as to what kind of illnesses and injuries they'll cover and what the benefits will be. And in all of the cases, they get to pick who the doctor is and have a great deal of control over both the medical care and the appeals process.
And this is perfectly legal. Isn't workers' comp somehow written in American law and sacred?
So in Texas, it is optional. Employers don't have to have it. And the trade-off is that they then can be sued in court, theoretically. A lot of these companies have since adopted arbitration plans that force workers to go into a private kind of dispute resolution process. And then since then, every other state has always had mandatory workers' comp, but Oklahoma and now Tennessee, South Carolina, and several other states are beginning to consider making workers' comp optional for their states as well by requiring them to have these sort of other alternative benefit plans that they have greater control over.
And Howard, what's in it for them to opt out? What are the benefits of opting out?
The biggest benefit for opting out for employers who have done it so far in Texas and Oklahoma is much, much greater control over the system that is supposed to provide benefits to workers when they're injured on the job. That includes medical benefits, taking care of them medically, paying for that medical care, and also wage replacement benefits. When they opt out in both Texas and Oklahoma, they go from a heavily regulated state system to a largely unregulated free market system, mm-hmm. where the employers themselves can determine. In Texas, for example, they can determine that instead of providing medical benefits for as long as necessary for a worker to get healthy enough to return to work, they can cut those benefits off when they want to, and most do in the plans that we looked at after 2 years. In Oklahoma, they write into their plans exclusions for certain kinds of injuries or illnesses that are job-related, which are covered by workers' comp but are not covered when they opt out. And ultimately, what they get to do is reduce their costs. They don't have to pay as much for workplace injuries. They gain more control over the medical care of the workers, and they gain control over the appeals process. If a worker disagrees with a benefits decision, if they're denied benefits for whatever reason. Under workers' compensation in both Texas and Oklahoma, you can appeal to the state workers' comp commission. You can go to state court. But under these opt-out systems, your appeals remain within the company. The employer hears your appeals. And if you want to appeal again, it's another employer sort of committee or a contractor hired by the employer who hears the appeal. So there's a far greater control over what benefits are awarded, how long they last, what happens with appeals, even control over medical care in terms of what doctors see the workers.
Mm-hmm. You highlight in this very important piece several workers, one of whom just couldn't work after she suffered a very severe back injury. Would you please, Michael, highlight one or two of the workers and how it's affected them, this opt-out plan?
Yeah, I'll kind of go through a few of them real quick. One of the things, by being able to choose what kind of injuries you cover, one of the things that a lot of companies have done have said that they won't cover certain types of hernias. Now, typically under workers' comp, if you have a hernia and you can prove that it's related to the job or sudden stress related to the job, then it's covered. But a lot of these plans will write out certain types of hernias. So we had a truck driver who was delivering food to French fries to McDonald's and had a hernia. It happened to be in a, you know, it was slightly above his belly button. And because it wasn't underneath his belly button, that type of hernia was not covered. We talked to a woman who hurt her back in an injury that lifting a patient at a nursing home. She didn't think much of it. Her job, you know, she's always feeling pains at her job. She went home, took a hot shower. The next morning she woke up and she couldn't move. So she went into the boss and she reported it first thing that morning. But her time had already run out. Under the plan, she had to report it by the end of her shift, or she was out of luck. And because it was related to work, her health insurance wouldn't cover it. So she had really no means to have any doctor really look at it and even diagnose what her problem was. And she's now struggling living on Social Security. And then the third situation we see in Texas, which Oklahoma doesn't quite have this, but in Texas they allow most of the companies will cut off medical benefits after 2 years. Now, under workers' comp, pretty much every state has said, you know, you broke it, you bought it. You know, if it happened on the job, if it's a workers' comp claim, you must provide medical care for that injury for the rest of the person's life.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had a truck driver who also hurt his back in a situation. The company covered it initially, and 2 years afterwards, he was having problems with the back surgery that he had. The screws were digging into his back, causing excruciating pain. And the company said, sorry, your 2 years is up. We're not going to cover another surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just been stuck now having to fight and use all of his resources to try to take on this company and get a little bit extra for his care.
In Wisconsin, and I'm sure that this is one of the things that you heard from the lawyer who must be making a find living on all of this in Texas. The co-sponsors of the bill in Wisconsin, which would change the state's workers' compensation laws here, not maybe quite as drastically as what's going on in Texas and Oklahoma, said this bill continues to ensure that when an employee is injured at work, the employee will be covered under workers' comp with the goal of receiving the necessary treatment and returning to work within his or her limitations. However, this bill will also ensure that the system is not abused and the scales of justice remain balanced and impartial. Did you hear that a lot from the lawyer who set this up and from others, that people feel the system is being abused? Workers' comp, that is?
Well, the notion of abuse in workers' comp hinges on the widely publicized idea that there are all these workers out there defrauding their employers.
Right.
But many experts who've looked at this particular kind of issue have told us is that the vast majority of fraud in workers' comp is committed by employers who misclassify their workers so that they don't qualify as employees and they don't have to pay workers' comp premiums for them. So there is workers, there is fraud by workers, and it's not insignificant in terms of dollar amounts, but that's not the biggest problem with fraud in workers' comp. The biggest problem is with employers. The people we've talked to don't necessarily raise fraud as the biggest problem in workers' comp. There are many other kinds of problems with a system that is bloated bureaucratically, that ends up pitting employers against employees, and the employees end up needing to go to court. So you have a system that can be bogged down in court cases. Lawyers get involved. They need to be paid, so that there's added costs in that way. So they complain about the inefficiency of the system. There have been studies that show that delivery of medical care costs more in the workers' compensation system than the same medical care provided in the group health system, for example. Mm-hmm. So there clearly is a problem with workers' compensation, which, of course, there are 50 different workers' compensation programs across the country. Each state has its own system. There clearly are problems there, and we did another investigative report earlier this year that talked about that. But this is presented as an alternative that makes the system more efficient, more responsive to employers. The problem with this alternative is that there is no independent oversight of it. And we were really the first people to come along to take an independent look at it. And we found that so far, at least, the way it's manifested in Oklahoma and Texas is that it's unregulated and that employers can pretty much do what they want. There is no regulation of these alternatives, these opt-out plans in Texas at all. And in Oklahoma, the state agency that is supposed to regulate these plans admitted to us that they don't have any authority to regulate them. I give credit to those who are looking for alternatives to workers' compensation. However, you have to look at these alternatives and see whether or not workers are helped or workers are hurt, and that's what we set out to do.
It is remarkable that there's virtually, as you write, no independent oversight. Don't you have to have somebody who's completely unbiased looking at this and not have it be who the employer puts on the panel?
Well, under state workers' comp law, in most states, you do have an opportunity to have independent oversight through the state workers' comp commission, through administrative law judges that work in the state workers' comp commission system, and you can go to state court. Under these opt-out plans, they're written so that the appeals are controlled by the employers, and if you don't like what you get through the employers, the system is based on the notion that these plans are workplace benefit plans that are covered by a federal law known as ERISA. And under ERISA, it's a very difficult bar for workers, injured workers, to reach in order to get to federal court in the first place to challenge a benefits decision. And then it's a system in which a judge is very limited in what they can consider in those cases. Basically, it's an arbitrary and capricious standard. So as long as the employer is following their plan, no matter how unfair the plan may seem to be to the worker, the employer is going to get a positive ruling. And so it's a system that's really set up to make it more difficult for workers to get outside of the employer's control.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit, Michael, about this Bill Minnick, whose company PartnerSource writes, you say, about 50% of the opt-out plans in Texas and nearly 90% in Oklahoma. And he works with his wife, who's the medical end of all of this. He must be making a killing.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit unclear about how much he's making, but he certainly, you know, he certainly almost the sole source provider of this in Oklahoma.
Yes.
And the major player in Texas, and certainly the major promoter of these kinds of programs nationwide. So Bill Minnick got started in the late 80s. In Wisconsin, Texas, all across, and almost everywhere across the country, there was an insurance crisis in the late 80s that caused rates to go up very high. And so in Texas, with this option to opt out and not have any workers' comp insurance at all, a lot of companies said, maybe we should think about doing that. But if we do that, we'd still like to pay benefits, and we'd still like to figure out a way where we're not going to be totally sued if somebody experiences a horrible accident, and then we have to go to court and pay $15 million for it. So Minnick was working for one of the largest law firms in Texas at the time, representing corporate clients, and they came up with this alternative through the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. This was a program that was designed to protect workers whose pensions were sort of going under in the early 1970s. But what happened is, compared to workers' comp, ERISA does not provide that kind of protection that workers' comp does for employees. So they created these plans under ERISA, and they started creating lawsuit waivers where individuals had to give up the right to sue, and eventually went to arbitration. So it kind of provided that protection while still providing some sort of benefits for workers. Minnick went out on his own in 94 and really aggressively started marketing this as an alternative. And he has recruited, if you go down the list of the biggest employers in the country, whether it's Walmart, whether it's Costco, whether it's Yum Brands, Home Depot, McDonald's, every major chain, retail, food companies, Tyson Foods, you can think of, is now opting out of workers' comp. And almost, a good number of them are using Minnick's firm PartnerSource.
Mm. We're going to welcome phone calls. Maybe some of you are aware of the research. We'll publish this on our Facebook page, and you can look at it. It's a very, very lengthy investigation done by ProPublica and NPR. They're looking at what's going on in Texas and Oklahoma, soon probably in Tennessee and South Carolina, and there are variations of this being considered in the state of Wisconsin. Their report is titled Inside Corporate America's Campaign to Ditch Workers' Comp. One Texas lawyer is helping companies opt out of workers' compensation and write their own rules. What does it mean for injured workers? Here's our phone number and other ways to reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter, and that's @KDunnShow. We have two guests with us who've been involved in putting together this meaty report. Michael Grable covers economic and labor issues for ProPublica. Howard Berkus is a correspondent for the NPR Investigations Unit. To you in just a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm interested in any of you who may have used workers' comp in the state of Wisconsin or in other states, were injured on the job and what recourse you had, or if you feel there is abuse in the system, what do you think of an opt-out plan of workers' comp that we're talking about this hour? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we start with Pat in Milwaukee, gentlemen. Hi, Pat.
Hey, guys. So this happens to be a topic that I know quite a bit about. I actually sell workers' compensation insurance for one of the larger agencies in Milwaukee. I recently placed a client who's headquartered in El Paso in a non-subscriber's policy, which is what it's called down there. I do agree with what your guests are saying. They are correct that when you do compare the benefits to statutory work comp policies, although they vary from state to state, injuries are treated differently. So, for example, let's say you lose a thumb, you know, operating a CNC machine or a punching press, something like that. In Alabama, you know, it might be $500 of indemnity a week. In Wisconsin, it might be $250. But that being said, if you look at this from, you know, state to state, they are typically not as beneficial to employees as statutory work comp coverage. However, I will say this. In Wisconsin, I'm familiar with this bill. It's going to be nothing like the non-subscribers policy in Oklahoma and Texas. I actually do think it's going to help the industry because from my 12 years, what I typically see is the benefits that are given to employees are good. They're needed, but there is a lot of abuse. And we're talking about attorneys making money down in Texas. You would be shocked at the cost of expenses on these work comp claims and going to court and still suing employers. So there is a lot of abuse on that end. I did just want to correct the record. They mentioned there was abuse on the employer end. If there are bad actors on the front side, on the back side, all these policies are audited at the end of the year from the insurance company who collects premiums and pay the claims. So they have an interest making sure that all these employees are properly classified so they're getting the correct amount of premium that the state says they should based on the rate. So it all gets caught on the back end. I've done this for 12 years. I haven't seen any companies that actually misclassify their employees to try and pay less premium. Number one, because they'd be caught. Number two, it's just not a good business practice, and I don't know many businesses that want to do this. So I am going to disagree with them on that point. But otherwise, I do agree with what they're saying. Great show, good topic. I think the bill will be good in Wisconsin when we learn a little bit more about it, just based on what I know.
Thanks very much, Pat, for the call. Michael, you want to start, and then Howard?
Sure. So, yes, I think we need to be very clear with the listeners here. What Wisconsin is proposing, as I understand it, is not opt-out. What opt-out is only really in some states in the South right now. What I understand is being proposed in Wisconsin is very similar to what we did. We did a story earlier this year that talked about how about 33 states in the country over the last 10, 12 years have changed their workers' comp laws through a period of workers' comp reform, and they would either cut benefits, give greater control of medical care to employers and insurers, or rewrite the rules in a way that it became much more difficult for injured workers to qualify for benefits. And some of the things that are being proposed are similar, are more similar to what we reported at in the first story. From what I understand, there's things that would lower the benefits if it was due to negligence on the behalf of the employee, or that would give employers greater control of who the doctor is that they can go see, or allow employers to stop paying benefits if the worker gets terminated for cause. So now those things all sound good when you read them, but they have implications. So I've seen a lot of companies where this is the law or the rule in these opt-out plans, where all of a sudden the worker is sent back to work before they're ready because the employer picks the doctor,
mm-hmm.
and then they miss work because they've taken some medication that causes them to be foggy, or they are in pain and they can't get up and go to work. So then they hit so many points and they're fired for cause, and now their benefits are cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when that's a serious injury? And this issue of negligence, so workers' comp has always been a no-fault system, meaning that if the employer was grossly negligent and committed a horrible abuse of workplace safety violations, and this is actually a relevant purpose for Wisconsin. Ashley Furniture has been written up a lot in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, written a lot by OSHA, of year after year having amputations and catastrophic injuries due to safety violations.
Mm-hmm.
But the worker can't really sue the employer, as I understand it. I don't know if exactly what the law is in Wisconsin over this. But as a trade-off, if the worker gets injured on the job and makes a mistake for safety because they're rushing, it's often very confusing, and there's often multiple causes to this. But it's very easy to say the worker committed a safety violation when there are other factors involved in it. And then that changes the bargain a bit in that they would have lower benefits than because of this, you know, this rule. Whereas, are they also, I mean, I don't know what the answer to this. Are they also going to get higher benefits if they can prove that the employer was negligent here? So this is really kind of the discussion over the Wisconsin bill of how it would sort of change the bargain of what workers and employers have. And just one more point I want to make on this before we turn it to Howard or another caller. The Wisconsin has always been very stable. Right now, I think it's right in the middle as of the median cost for workers' comp insurance in the country. And one of the reasons for that is that, unlike a lot of other states, Wisconsin has always run bills through labor and management advisory committees where they have both people from representing workers and people representing employers to come and figure out, if we're going to change the bargain, what can we do to agree on it in a way that all parties think is fair. And in a lot of states, when there's been change in the politics of the state legislature, one side has gained more control than another, and they've successfully, over the last 10, 12 years, been able to push through things that only one side wants to the expense of the other side.
Mm-hmm. Howard, you want to add?
The only thing I'd add, two things quickly. One is that I'm glad to hear that Pat's experience in Wisconsin is that employers are not misclassifying their workers. I'd actually like to see some data on that. But what is clearly happening nationally is that workers who are by law really full-time workers or being classified as temps are misclassified in other ways so that they don't get benefits. This is a huge problem. Michael has done stories about this. The Center for Public Integrity has done stories about this phenomenon. It's a huge national issue, and it is cited by the people who focus on the notion of fraud as the biggest element of fraud in workers' comp. Mm. The other thing is, on the point that Pat made about lawyers driving up costs, I don't think there's any question that happens, in the sense that once lawyers get involved and you end up in court, your costs can increase. However, what's critical to look at there is, what representation does a worker need in order to be treated fairly? And under these opt-out plans, there is no representation essentially for workers. And that, I think, is the key point. If the workers can be treated fairly without getting lawyers involved, then I think the system will work fine. But as long as workers are not treated fairly by their employers, and that is also a huge problem, as we've seen with the cases that we've documented in our stories, then they need to go somewhere. And if the only place they have to go is to attorneys to file cases to challenge what they consider to be unfair decisions, then that's just going to continue.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at these plans. You write in your research that the list of what these opt-out plans don't cover runs for pages. They won't pay for wheelchair vans, exposure to asbestos, silica dust or mold, assaults unless the employee is defending an employer's business or property, chiropractors, any more than 75 home health visits. Costco won't cover external hearing aids. How is that negotiated, and what have I not said that might be important to say? That's a fairly substantial list, isn't it?
Well, Costco will cover hearing aids. They just don't pay enough for the employee at Costco to buy one at Costco. But go ahead, Michael. You were going to.
Yeah. And so the question was, how are these negotiated? The answer is, they're not negotiated. The employer determines what the benefit is, and the worker has no choice really in accepting or not accepting. The other things that were really startling to us that are very different from workers' comp, I'm not sure if you mentioned McDonald's and a number of other companies won't cover carpal tunnel.
Oh, yes.
you know, this is something that has been recognized as work-related in a lot of instances of industrial environments. No question, these types of injuries are covered under workers' comp. U.S. Foods, which is the country's second largest food distributor, doesn't cover occupational diseases. And we've learned a lot over the last 25 years about certain diseases like asbestos that are asbestosis that are caused by work. And there are other things, like we saw Brookdale Senior Living, which is the largest chain of assisted living facilities and nursing homes in the country, doesn't cover bacterial infections in Oklahoma. Now, bacterial infections are a huge issue in any sort of healthcare field. So to say, to write that out, and maybe they just didn't recognize that it was in their plan when they bought it, that they would be writing a lot of injuries that would typically happen at a nursing home.
I would imagine, because there are so many very large companies who are covered in Texas and Oklahoma, that they would think and say, wow, we're really making ourselves a lot of money. We're saving a lot of money going with opt-out, that there would be a national push on the part of those very large chains to have this happen in many other states. Is that happening?
Yeah, it is. What we found is that there is a national group that, in part, formed by Minnick and Minnick's clients, Minnick being the lawyer here, that called the Association for Responsible Alternatives to Workers' Compensation. It was started in late 2013 by former executives at, or sorry, former managers at Walmart, at Nordstrom, at I'm blanking on some of the others, but I will find them and we'll keep talking about them as we go on. But they have gone along going, their plan is to go state by state and try to get these passed in legislatures around the country. And Minnick has set his goal as having about a dozen states within the next decade. And so he got, you know, Lowe's, the hardware store, has signed on to this. Companies that generally have good reputations with workers, like Safeway and Whole Foods, have signed on. And so these are really big-name companies that everyone knows and that have a lot of power. When you go to a state legislature, they are the ones who are known as the big employer in the state. They're probably big contributors. And this campaign has been going on fairly quietly with some success without anyone ever stepping back until we did to say, what has been the experience in Texas? You know, other than what PartnerSource is telling us and what Bill Minnick is telling us, what are the actual results of this program?
Yeah.
You know, and one thing that these companies see, so these are often companies that have operations in Texas as well as other states, and they see that their workers' comp costs are lower in Texas because of opt-out, and so they decide that they want to have the same kind of savings in other states.
Sure.
And so that's what motivates them to be involved.
Yeah. Vince from Kenosha shares this message in email. He says that we should not change any rules here in Wisconsin. In his case, having an independent third party involved was critical. If anything, Vince said that we need a new law that further protects and advocates on behalf of workers. Michael?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
The whole thing or just the end?
What Vince is talking about is a really important element to the people who are concerned about changes in workers' comp laws that have occurred across the country. As Michael noted earlier, in the earlier investigation we did, which is available at ProPublica.org and NPR.org, one of the major changes that has occurred in many states is greater control by the employer over medical decisions. And there's an inherent conflict that some people would see between when an employer is controlling a decision-making process that could result in them saving money. And that's why this notion of some kind of independent review is important, and that's part of workers' comp law in every state, and that's one of the major concerns for people who are concerned about these opt-out plans and about this whole notion of opting out of workers' comp, that's one of the biggest concerns, is that employers, employees won't get properly represented. They won't have a fair review of their claims.
We'll take more phone calls in one moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about opting out of workers' comp, which is taking place in Texas and in Oklahoma. And there's a movement afoot to have that happen in other places. We have two guests with us this hour, and they have, with ProPublica and NPR, conducted a very, very thorough investigation of what's happening with these opt-out plans in Texas and also in Oklahoma. And we're welcoming phone calls about the findings. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our guests are Howard Berkus, correspondent for the NPR Investigations Unit, and Michael Grable. And Michael covers economic and labor issues for ProPublica. We'll return to you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls. Randy in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Randy.
Hello, how are you today?
Fine, how are you?
Good.
Good.
In 1999, I broke my hip at work. 7 years and a few months later, workers' compensation insurance paid all my medical bills. My private insurance carrier refused to pay my medical bills for 7.5 years. About all my medical bills went unpaid. My employer demoted me while I was off work, and I contacted the Workers' Compensation Oversight, whatever it is in Wisconsin, the exact name I don't recall anymore, and they told me that I could have a teleconference to resolve the issues with my employer who stopped paying my bills, stopped paying my wages, and I could represent myself in this telephone conversation, but my employer had the right to an attorney, or I could go to arbitration. And the first available date would have been 18 months to 2 years out.
Ooh.
To resolve the insurance company not paying workers' compensation to me while I was still under a doctor's care.
Michael.
Wow. Yeah, and that's something we hear a lot from state to state is the long time it takes to get a hearing within workers' comp court. This isn't supposed to be an adversarial process. And benefits were supposed to be prompt. And it's something that both employees and employers complain about. In looking at, I'm looking at a summary of the bill that's being proposed in Wisconsin, and I don't think I see anything that specifically addresses anything that would speed up what happened to you. But it's certainly an issue, and perhaps if there's other workers like that, it's something you should bring up. The other thing, I also want to respond. During the break, I was looking up something that Pat had mentioned about misclassification.
Mm-hmm.
So there was Wisconsin put together a misclassification task force in 2009. And what they found was in auditing employers that 44% of workers that they had looked at were misclassified as independent contractors when they should have been considered workers.
Mm.
What that means is when they're independent contractors, they don't get workers' comp at all.
Mm-hmm.
Workers' comp insurance companies don't get any premium from those people, and when they get injured on the job, somebody has to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty significant problem, 44%.
Right.
Could I interject something
yes,
also?
Yes, go ahead, Randy.
I felt at the time that the system, that the corporation, the insurance company, purposely stop paying my benefits so that I would go back to work sooner. However, I was unable to go back to work because I actually broke my hip, and I was waiting for my natural hip to heal. I lost my home, my automobile. I lost over $90,000 because I could no longer afford to pay my bills. I had to sign my house back to the bank. I had to let my car go.
Mm.
And there was absolutely nothing that the state of Wisconsin was willing to do, and the laws are so much to the benefit of the insurance companies that they could represent themselves with attorneys. But why wouldn't I be able to represent myself with an attorney to the same extent that the insurance company and my employer was allowed?
Howard.
Well, I think that helps illustrate how you know, why attorneys may be needed to represent workers so that the system is fairer to them. But what Randy was caught up in is this kind of catch-22 that we have seen in other places, in which the workers' comp carrier refuses to pay and the insurance company won't pay because it's a workers' it's a workplace injury. Workplace injuries are supposed to be paid by workers' comp, not by your regular insurance company. And so he's caught in the middle, right? He can't get anybody to pay. And in some states, there are offices in the workers' comp agencies that help workers, you know, navigate these kinds of problems and issues. They may not have the authority to actually resolve them, but they help them navigate. Clearly, Randy's experience shows that the system didn't work for him. And unfortunately, there are a lot of Randys that we've encountered as we've looked at workers' compensation throughout the country. And I think the important thing is that when a state, Wisconsin or any other state, considers reforming its workers' comp laws, it needs to take people like Randy into consideration. What worked and didn't work for them, and how could the law be made better so that it works for Randy and it works for employers?
Mm-hmm. How are things now, Randy?
I just made an appointment today to go see my orthopedic surgeon. I broke my hip in 99, and my hip is failing again. And I might also add that when I contacted my private insurance carrier and asked them to pay my bills, whom I had a contractual agreement to offset my losses, they actually refused to offset my losses, and they said that workers' comp was responsible.
Right.
But I didn't
That's
have
right.
a contract with workers' compensation. My employer did.
Right.
So it was even compounded even worse, because here I'd been paying all these premiums for medical insurance that really turned out to be nothing, and I contact an attorney. I couldn't even sue my own insurance company for failure to pay my bills.
You know, Franz Kafka was a workers' comp clerk. And
was
that
he really?
That kind of circumstance,
yes,
that Randy, that you found yourself in, which is not uncommon, is the kind of thing that you think, you know, Franz Kafka would have invented.
Exactly. It can drive you absolutely nuts for that kind of situation to take place. Oh, Randy, I hope things get better for you. What a story. And there are others out there who have a story similar. And you highlight somebody in the piece who got hurt on the job in the opt-out state. And then he had to go through, because he couldn't do workers' comp, he had to do what, his regular health insurance plan, and wound up paying co-pays and deductibles that were tens of thousands of dollars.
That was Mike Pinkard in Texas. I think you're talking about the truck driver for McDonald's,
yes,
for the company that provided French fries and other materials to McDonald's. He had a hernia. He was out $10,000 out of pocket. In his case, his insurance company, his health insurance company, did pay, but his deductibles and co-pays came out to about $10,000. He was at a stage in his life where he was close to retirement, so he ended up just retiring and you know, writing the whole thing off. But there are much younger workers who we've encountered who get into these kinds of situations and their lives are ruined. Like Randy, they end up not getting medical treatment for years. They don't get wage replacement payments. We spoke with a worker in Texas, a truck driver who herniated his discs. Michael mentioned him, whose benefits timed out after 2 years. And he told us that there are weeks when he only can survive on maybe a half a can of SpaghettiOs or canned ravioli each day, because he has no wage replacement benefits. He can't get the medical care he can't get back to work.
Yeah.
But something else that Randy said jumps out. So he hurt his hip in 1999. He's saying he's now having a reoccurrence of it. So one of the things that I'm looking at the summary of the Wisconsin bill is that it would reduce the statute of limitations for reporting traumatic injuries from 12 years to 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that's a very controversial provision right now being discussed because of situations like Randy's, where as time goes on, you might have a reoccurrence of your injury, and if it's happened 12 years after the fact, like it sounds like it's happened with Randy, he wouldn't be able to go back to workers' comp and say, hey, this is all related to my original injury and I should be covered. I hope I'm not wrong on that, but that's my understanding of how it's being interpreted. And the other thing that you had mentioned about, you know, this medical people trying to go down to the general health insurance, so cost shifting has become a major concern. And OSHA recently, we kind of talked about it in our initial report that workers' comp, I think, pays a very small percentage of what people estimate the cost of workplace injuries and accidents is in the United States. And a lot of it is getting picked up. I think the estimates are about $30 billion a year are being picked up by public assistance programs like Social Security disability, like Medicare and Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enough of a concern that OSHA has written a report about it. And now Senator Sanders, Senator Frank, and Senator Patty Murray and others have written a letter to the Department of Labor asking them to take a closer look at this, perhaps even as the debate goes on about the health of the Social Security Disability Trust Fund. So there's a lot of concern now in Congress about whether or not workers' comp insurance companies and employers are shifting the cost to taxpayers and to injured workers and their families.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655. We do have a couple more minutes for phone calls. Howard, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say what's important about what Michael just said is that it goes to the heart of what workers' compensation was really about in the very beginning, which is this grand bargain in which workers were guaranteed the medical care they needed, wage replacement payments that they needed until they could get better and get back to work, no matter what, no fault. And in exchange, employers could not be sued for negligence, or they could not be sued for wrongful death or wrongful injury. This is called the grand bargain of workers' compensation. And that grand bargain, employers were accepting the idea, we're going to pay for workplace injuries. When this cost shifting occurs, employers are no longer a part of that grand bargain. They're shifting the cost to the private insurance companies that aren't part of workers' comp, or they're shifting the cost to taxpayers who are paying for Social Security, food stamps, disability, you know, whatever it is. And mm-hmm. That's a really important element to sort of understand about what's going on when employers are not paying for the cost of workplace injuries.
Mm-hmm. Don't you find it surprising and perhaps a little alarming, Michael, that nobody dug into this story until the two of you did?
Well, I think it's an important point because it was certainly moving fast through some of the legislatures. But one of the things is that this was primarily a Texas problem for a long time, and then it quietly got passed in Oklahoma, and it quietly got spread to other states. So until they started making this a nationwide campaign in 2015, no one was really paying attention. They very successfully mustered some of the biggest companies in America to make this cause. No one, even the people who were sponsoring the bill, were going to second guess what they were hearing from the promoters, which seems rather strange to me. And so now I understand there's even some major employers who have been dropping out of this lobbying group.
We have time for one more phone call. Al in Superior. Hi, Al.
Hi.
Hi.
My issues are I had a work comp injury. I lost my job. I worked for a big hospital in Minnesota, actually. And to settle my case after a year of denial of insurance, I had to sign off on an employee releasing from even third-party vendors for that employer, number one. Number two, the laws that are out there to protect the employees, the fines against the employers are so small that I don't think that they really care if they have to pay those down the road. And let's see, the other one, there's no laws to protect the injured worker's credit rating because the insurance companies deny payment for years and years and years, and, you know, medical bills pile up and all that. So.
Howard, about 20 seconds, 30.
Well, on the issue of fines, I've done some reporting in the past on how OSHA typically cuts fines when there are violations in the workplace, so that that's not necessarily a disincentive to have a safe workplace. And in terms of this settlement, one of the clauses in Oklahoma opt-out plans is a mandatory settlement in which the employee has no choice. If they don't accept the settlement, they lose all their benefits. The employer determines how much to settle for and when to settle. So that's a really important issue that Al raised.
Thank you both very much for your important work and for being with us this hour. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our guest, Howard Burke, is correspondent for the NPR Investigations Unit, and Michael Grable also with us. Michael covers economic and labor issues for ProPublica. Both of them have looked at some very important issues and done investigative work, at least in this area that we talked about today, that simply hasn't been done before. So we will have the report on our Facebook page so you can access it. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show, and thanks to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. News coming up.